A child with ASD can be helped substantially by establishing a more consistent bedtime routine. This is often referred to as good sleep hygiene. In an article on sleep hygiene for children with developmental disabilities published by the American Academy of Pediatrics, the following recommendations were offered for helping children with developmental disabilities sleep better. 1. Provide a sleep environment that is comfortable for the child in terms of temperature, lighting, mattress, textures of blankets, and so on. 2. Provide a relatively dark sleep environment because even low levels of light inhibit melatonin production. A nightlight is okay if necessary. 3. Establish a regular sleep-wake schedule, including regular times for naps, going to sleep, and awakening. In general, there should not be more than an hour's difference in bedtimes and wake-up times during the week and weekends. 4. Plan bedtime activities carefully to help calm your child before sleep, because children with ASD can easily be overstimulated. Avoid new and unexpected activities, excessive noise, vigorous play, and large meals close to bedtime. Bathing, lullabies, presence of a familiar toy or blanket, and looking at books together are usually calming. Other calming activities include light massage, brushing hair, and soft music. 5. Do not have a TV in your child's room. Do not play movies or TV as a way to help your child fall asleep. If your child has a sleep problem, the first person to consult is the psychologist on your child's early intervention team. There are excellent behavioral methods for parents to use that can improve children's sleep enormously. V. Mark Durand has written two excellent books to help parents improve their child's sleep based on good science. One is called Sleep Better, 1998, and the other is When Children Don't Sleep Well, Interventions for Pediatric Sleep Disorders, Parent Workbook, 2008. Full details on both are listed in the resources in the bonus PDF. If these techniques are not effective, check with your pediatrician, who can provide more information about help for sleep. Melatonin is sometimes given orally to assist in establishing a regular sleep-wake cycle, but this should be done under the supervision of your family pediatrician. Fact: over half of children with ASD have sleep difficulties, with insomnia the most common problem reported by parents. Criteria for measuring the quality of a home-based intervention program. If the answer is yes to each of the following questions, you can be confident of the quality and experience of the intervention group. Does the program manager have an educational background appropriate for working with young children with ASD, including a graduate degree, master's degree, or PhD in a field like behavior analysis, special education, or psychology? Have the program manager and therapists been trained and certified in an intervention method with scientific evidence to support it? What is it? Have the program manager and all home therapists passed a criminal and educational background check? Does the program manager spend time regularly supervising the home therapists, observing them at work with your child, reviewing your child's progress, and working with your child directly and adjusting teaching strategies to improve progress? Do the home therapists you have met appear well-trained, competent, professional, and motivated? Do the program manager and home therapists encourage you to observe and join their treatment sessions with your child and explain what they are doing? Does the program manager consult with professionals in other disciplines, such as occupational therapy, speech-language therapy, and pediatrics when needed? Does the intervention program use a curriculum that identifies the specific objectives your child is working to achieve? Do the home therapists collect data on your child's progress daily and review the data regularly with the program manager? Does the program manager meet regularly with you and other professionals who are part of your child's intervention team? Do you feel that you are a respected part of the intervention team and that your program manager listens to you? Does the manager help you prioritize what to focus on with your child? Does he or she show you how to help your child make progress on his or her objectives in your interactions with your child at home? Gastrointestinal and feeding problems. Another common medical problem experienced by many children with ASD is gastrointestinal, GI distress. Parents frequently report that their child with ASD has abdominal pain, diarrhea, gas, and constipation. The most common problems reported by parents are diarrhea and constipation, which can alternate in the same child. Although these problems are fairly common in all children, there is some evidence that they occur more frequently in children with ASD. Such GI problems cause pain and discomfort and, like sleep problems, can result in problem behaviors and difficulty paying attention. These problems in turn can result in failure to benefit fully from the intervention program. Because children with ASD have difficulty communicating, it may be challenging to know whether or not your child is experiencing abdominal or other types of pain. Be observant of abrupt changes in your child's behavior, excessive crying or whining, self-injurious behavior, holding her stomach, and other nonverbal indicators of pain. If you are suspicious, take your child to the pediatrician to have her evaluated. GI problems are treatable. Depending on the type and severity of the GI problem, treatments can include dietary interventions, nutritional supplements, and medications. There currently is no scientific evidence that special diets, including elimination of casein and gluten, improve the behavior of children with ASD. However, some parents have anecdotally reported significant benefit from such diets, including improved attention and fewer behavior problems. Eating problems are also common among children with ASD. A recent study published by the American Academy of Pediatrics found that children with ASD often start to have feeding difficulties as infants. They are more likely than typical infants to start eating solid food at a later date, for example. By 1 year of age, children with ASD are more likely to be described as difficult to feed and very choosy. As toddlers, children with ASD have a less varied diet. Although this study did not find any differences between children with ASD and typically developing children in terms of nutrition, other studies have found that children with ASD sometimes have deficiencies in certain nutrients, perhaps because of their picky eating or the use of special diets. If you have concerns about your child's eating patterns, bring this up at your next pediatrician visit. Also, discuss this with your case manager, your behaviorist, or the psychologist on your child's early intervention team. There are many ways you can help your child eat a wider range of foods, and your therapists should be able to help you a great deal. If your doctor is concerned about your child's nutrition, he or she may refer you to a nutritionist. Sometimes at university or hospital clinics, there is a nutritionist on the team who can provide specific suggestions regarding how to help your child eat better or how you can make sure your child is getting the nourishment he needs. There are different reasons a child may have eating difficulties, including having trouble chewing and swallowing, sensory sensitivities related to different food textures, food intolerances or allergies, and avoidance of novelty. Your early intervention team and doctor, working together, can help you determine whether you should worry about your child's nutrition, help you understand why your child is having eating difficulties, and help you improve your child's eating habits. Fact: feeding problems are common in children with ASD and can show up during infancy. Seizures. Although seizures are not usually a problem in early childhood, approximately 1 out of every 4 individuals with ASD will develop seizures at some point in life. Seizures typically develop for the first time in adolescence or even adulthood in ASD, though occasionally they appear early in life. It is important to have seizures treated, because the seizure activity can affect how the brain functions and develops. Thus, if your child has a seizure or has symptoms that suggest seizure activity, seek medical attention as soon as possible. There are many types of seizures. Seizures that involve staring spells, absent seizures. Seizures that involve repetitive movements, partial complex seizures, and seizures that involve convulsions, grand mal seizures. Mild symptoms may be difficult to detect because some of the symptoms, such as staring into space and not responding when called, are also typical symptoms of ASD. Symptoms of an absent seizure may include blanking out, or becoming unresponsive to sounds and sights for 10 to 20 seconds, blinking repetitively, eyes rolling up a bit, mouth movements, muscle stiffness, jerking movements, rubbing fingers together, and staring spells. If you have concerns about possible seizure activity, check with your pediatrician, who may refer your child to a child neurologist for an evaluation. Putting it all together. As you can see, there are many different parts to early intervention, including the basic intervention program, either group or one-on-one, and sometimes additional therapy from a speech-language pathologist, occupational therapist, and/or physician. Over time, you will learn about the choices that are available in your community, decide what you feel is best for your child, and voice your preferences so that your child gets the best services available in your community. You will need to encourage the different people working with your child to talk to each other and share information. These things need to happen, but they don't happen automatically or all at once. They happen step by step because parents make them happen. Many parents find it helpful to have regular team meetings with all the professionals involved in their child's care. The team meetings help keep all the team members on the same wavelength, focusing on similar goals, handling behavior problems in similar ways, learning from and listening to each other. You have the right to ask for a team meeting at any time to review your child's IFSP or IEP and to discuss progress. Other ways to help your team work together include these. 1. Have a notebook that stays with your child throughout the day so that teachers, therapists, and family members can make notes about your child's behavior and progress. 2. Ask your child's intervention team to send you information about your child's progress each week. 3. Some tech-oriented families even set up a blog or website on which different team members as well as the parents can communicate what they are working on, describe what has been effective or not, and offer tips that can be helpful to the other providers. This is a place to share problems and victories as your child begins to develop new skills. In this chapter, we have provided basic information on setting up an intervention program for your child. For further reading, we have provided lists of excellent websites and books on the topics covered in this book. Refer to the resources section in the bonus PDF. Up to this point, we've been focusing on your child. But what about you? Like your child, you and your family need special attention as you meet the challenges ahead. By doing so, you will be less likely to experience burnout and will be better able to meet the needs of your child with ASD and the rest of your family. The next chapter provides strategies for making sure that you and your family stay healthy and balanced in spite of the stresses that come with raising a young child with ASD. 2. Taking care of yourself and your family. As Carmen and Roberto scrambled to put together the best intervention plan for Teresa, their 3-year-old with autism, several weeks flew by in a flurry of phone calls and appointments. Luckily, Carmen worked the afternoon shift, 3 to 11 p.m., so she was home during the morning and could make phone calls. All the focus was now on Teresa. Roberto was working the early shift, 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. The parents saw little of each other except on the weekends. When they had any time together, Carmen tried to tell her husband what was happening with Teresa. All the appointments, all the new people, the advice others were giving her about how to handle Teresa's tantrums and how to help her communicate. It seemed as if Teresa was all they were talking about now, and Roberto felt distant from it. He wished this would all pass like a bad dream, and life would go back to when he had a happy wife, a close marriage, and a life that was smooth and easy. He worried about his ability to take care of his wife, son, and daughter in the face of this new, unknown, and scary future. Carmen was living this new life every waking moment. There was little time to talk about anything else, even 5-year-old Justino, who had just started school. Carmen soon started to have trouble sleeping. She lay in bed worrying about Teresa. Would the intervention program they had found really help her? Would their health insurance cover the expenses? Would she need to quit her job to focus on Teresa and Justino? How could they afford that? Her mind was swimming with questions and worries, and her eyes filled with tears. She looked over at Roberto and felt far away from him. He had become quieter and quieter. They rarely laughed and had fun together anymore. He was staying late at work more often. She couldn't blame him for wanting to avoid the challenges they were facing, but she needed him more than ever now. And what about Justino? He went to kindergarten in the morning, and Grandma picked him up afterward, since Teresa had therapy until noon, far away from Justino's school. Grandma brought him home at 1 p.m. and stayed with the children until Roberto arrived home at 3 or so. Carmen felt as if she hardly saw Justino anymore, except to send him off in the morning. She pulled the covers over her head and buried her face in the pillow. She wished she had someone to talk to about all this, but it was difficult to talk to her family and friends. They told her that she was overreacting, that the doctors were wrong, that she was spending too much time with Teresa. No one knew what she was going through. She needed advice from her mother, help from her family, and love from her husband. She needed all the energy she could muster. For the first time, she was going to have to draw a lot more people into her family circle. Would she be able to find people who understood what they were going through? People who could help with Teresa and even give them a break now and then? I completely relate to this. Even though I worked in the special education field and had colleagues, no one understood what I was feeling, and I felt completely helpless and alone. It's a devastating feeling. Adjusting to caring for a child with ASD. The feelings that Carmen and Roberto were experiencing are the feelings of many parents who are adjusting to having a child with ASD. Research has shown what families of children with ASD have been telling us for years. Caring for a child with ASD can be very stressful. But many parents have also told us that it can be rewarding and fulfilling. Not in the first few worried, hectic months, perhaps, but after that, as new routines get set, as children start to progress, and as the future becomes brighter. During the first several months or even years after learning that your child has ASD, it is tempting to put aside your own needs and those of other family members while you focus on your child with ASD. It is, however, very important to take some time to consider the needs of your whole family, including yourself. It's tempting to put yourself at the bottom of the priority list. Don't do it. Taking care of yourself is the only way you'll be able to take care of everyone else. Therefore, it's important that you frequently take stock of how you are doing and take steps to ensure that you are healthy, both physically and mentally. The prospect of taking care of yourself, your spouse or partner, and your other children may seem overwhelming when you feel that you're devoting every minute of the day to your child with ASD. We won't pretend it will be easy. But our experiences with numerous parents who have faced the same challenges have taught us some tips for adjusting to having a child with ASD. In every way we can, we try in this chapter to describe some strategies that may make it a little easier to handle all that's on your plate. From the daily management hassles to the tough balancing act of staying close as a family, to finding some of the rewards and fulfillment that lie along this new path you are taking. Taking care of your family. Everyone in your family will be affected by the new path that ASD has carved out for you, but the impact does not have to be negative, especially after you've gotten through the initial adjustment period. For most parents, especially during that adjustment period, the biggest impediment to maintaining healthy relationships and keeping the family strong and united seems to be time. Time to spend with each other and time to communicate. Of course, finding the same amount of time for your other family members now that you're trying to help a child with ASD is challenging. Fortunately, parents who have been through it have shared ideas that can help. Fostering your marital relationship. Does the challenge of raising a child with ASD have a negative effect on marriage, above and beyond the effects of having a child without special needs? Not necessarily. In fact, research based on hundreds of families of children with ASD from early childhood until young adulthood showed that there was no difference in divorce rates of couples with and without a young child with ASD. As the children reached late adolescence and adulthood, couples of children with ASD were somewhat more likely to divorce, but it is unclear why this was the case. The added pressures of taking care of a child with ASD often result in less time for your primary, marital, or long-term relationship, time that has already been reduced by the needs of young children. You may feel as if you have no choice here. The needs of your child with ASD may have to come first right now. But if you leave your partner on the sidelines, you're denying yourself a critical member of your social support network. Additionally, managing this huge new challenge outside of the partnership can start to distance the two of you at one of the most significant points in your relationship. A few guidelines are particularly important to follow at this early stage after your child's diagnosis. Communicate. Talk to each other. Because you are so caught up in the issues involving your young child with ASD, it is hard to think about or talk about anything else. Roberto felt as if Carmen was living the new life that had been thrust upon them and had completely left the old one. He himself felt caught between two lives. The old one was gone, and a new one, seemingly much less satisfying, was on the horizon, unknown, stressful, and scary. While Carmen was living it, he was only hearing about it, and not much else from his wife. For Carmen, this was all she could think about. She wanted to share it with her husband, but he didn't seem very interested. It made her angry that he was not joining her in all the decision-making and stress she now faced, and she felt distant from him in a new way. It's important to share other parts of your lives in your communications. When you see each other after your separate daily routines, make a point of asking about the other things that matter to each of you. How was work today? What do you think we could do for fun this weekend? Do you still have a cold? Did you talk to your mother on the phone today? What's new with her? Really listen and try to join your partner in his or her life when you talk. Try hard to spend just a few minutes each day together, focused on each other, before launching into the subject of the children. Spending a little time focused on each other is crucial. As I reflect on the past, we never did this. Everything was about the kids and their disabilities and therapies. Nothing about us anymore, like we didn't matter. At the time, I felt that we didn't. Nothing was more important than the kids, but in retrospect, you always need to find time for yourself and your relationships with your other children, spouse, and family members. Everyone is important to the family dynamic, and happiness is key. Listen. When your partner is talking, listen quietly. Don't interrupt or judge. Try restating what your partner has said to make sure you've understood his or her perspective and feelings. For example, if your partner tells you about a problem he or she experienced that day, refrain from criticizing and telling your partner what to do. Instead, it's more helpful to restate the highlights of your partner's message and offer support, saying something like this: "It sounds like you really had a rough day. You sound tired and upset. How can I help? It's very common for parents to have disagreements about their child with ASD. They may have different opinions about the diagnosis, what type of intervention to use, discipline, and expectations. For these kinds of disagreements, the first step is choosing a good time to talk them through, so you can really hear what your partner is thinking. The second step is really listening to the other's point of view and taking it seriously, rather than thinking that your partner doesn't know or understand. For example, if your partner makes a suggestion about a new treatment that you disagree with, try to respond by eliciting more about why your partner thinks it's a good idea, rather than dismissing the idea or criticizing your partner. Listen closely to hear each other's reasoning and search for a midpoint or convergence between your two views or another solution that works for both of you. If coming to a decision requires information about your child that one or both of you need, see if you can find a time to sit down together with your service coordinator or a team member to ask questions and gather the information you need. If you are having trouble hearing each other or finding a common ground, see if you can meet with a psychologist or social worker on your child's team to come to a more shared point of view. But before you seek others' help, try hard to hear each other out openly and respectfully. Helpful tip: avoid placing blame at all costs. It's human nature to try to find someone to blame for your child's diagnosis, for the dreams that you may feel have been dashed, for the sadness you feel right after a diagnosis. But there is no blame. No one caused this. There was nothing anyone could have done to prevent this. You and your family are the solution, not the problem. Blaming yourself is destructive and unproductive. Blaming your partner will undermine his or her self-confidence, weaken your shared trust, and lead to feelings of estrangement. You need each other more than ever now. Your partner can be the most helpful person of all in this new challenge. When you start to feel blame or guilt, recognize the feelings and remind yourself that no one is to blame for autism. Show your partner that you care. Showing acceptance of and empathy for your partner's feelings and expressing interest in what's going on in his or her life are important ways to show that you care. Dr. John Gottman, a renowned marriage expert, stresses the importance of the small day-to-day interactions that we have with our partners. These everyday exchanges are the foundation on which strong marital relationships are built. See if you can find some way to do or say things that are thoughtful, caring, and supportive daily. Dr. Gottman's research has shown that these ordinary but loving gestures act as deposits in your emotional bank account. Having a full emotional bank account can help each of you now during this ongoing stress and when inevitable conflicts arise. You have something to draw upon. Take what you need and deposit as much as you can. Helpful tip: if you need reminders of how to communicate in positive ways and show your partner you care in the midst of the stress of this new path, try a simple device we'll be offering at the end of each chapter in Part 2, Chapters 4 through 13. That is, write reminders to yourself to help you remember the importance of nurturing your relationship in these hard times. Write whatever reminders are particularly helpful for you, whether it's "don't say you always" Or remember to tell her I love you before hanging up the phone. Or remember to greet him when he first gets home, no matter what. We call these reminders refrigerator lists, but you can post them wherever you'll see them regularly. On your phone, in a drawer you open every morning to get dressed, in your closet near your clothes, or any other place that works for you. Keep your sense of humor. Marriage experts have long recognized the benefits of maintaining a healthy sense of humor. Laughter reduces stress, feels good, and increases a sense of intimacy. Especially during an argument, humor, as long as it doesn't attack or put the other person down, can relieve tension and lighten the situation. As silly as it might sound, even watching funny movies together helps bring people together and relieve stress. Seek out ways to laugh. Consider a Friday family comedy night when you take turns picking out a comedy film to watch together. I personally have found it really easy to find humor in situations that others can find scary or weird about autism with other parents who are going through it with me. Networking with fellow caregivers about the trials and tribulations can often bring not only comfort, but much-needed humor. And these people are empathetic and not judgmental. For example, if I want to talk about how my daughter smeared poop on the dog, I think a fellow autism mommy may get that a lot more than a neurotypical mom. Make time for your relationship. Is making time for your relationship easier said than done? Definitely. But it's not impossible. Try to carve out some regular time that is devoted specifically to being, one, together with your partner, two, free of the distractions of children, and three, enjoyable for you both. Spending just a few minutes each day involved with each other can really help connect you after a tough day and open you to hearing about each other's lives, both the joys and the sorrows, in a caring, non-judgmental, and honest way. When friends or family members ask what they can do to help, ask them to come over to give you a little couple time. Or ask if you can drop the children over for a little while with them. Making time for your relationship involves finding help with the kids that you trust. If there is no one to help, ask your service coordinator or team member for ideas. In some places, respite care is available for children with ASD, and there are a number of resources you can turn to. We describe these next. Use respite care. Respite care is a term for babysitting or other short-term care provided to an individual with a developmental disability or other chronic medical condition so that the family members can get some time away from the daily routines of caring for the individual. Respite care can be very helpful in relieving stress and providing an opportunity to take a break and spend time by yourself, with your partner, or with other family members. It's a time to recharge your batteries, relax, and take care of yourself and the rest of your family. You can find a respite care provider through the National Respite Network and Resource Center. www.archrespite.org. The website offers a national respite locator service that will help you locate respite care services in your state. Services are provided by trained, sometimes licensed, employees of these agencies. Many programs are provided by local organizations such as churches, school, and other nonprofit organizations. Respite care can be provided in or out of the home. Respite care programs often offer training for friends and family members in how to care for a child with ASD, so you can call upon a friend or relative to care for your child. In addition to respite care, there are resources to turn to for the occasional night out. Ask people at the local autism association or parent group for references. Ask other parents that you meet about child care. Many parents have experienced, skilled people working with their children with ASD who might provide babysitting for you. If you have no other leads, call a college near you. Ask for the psychology, social work, or child development department. And ask if there are students who would be willing to babysit for a child with ASD. Have a prospective sitter come over to play and meet your child ahead of time. See how the student interacts with your child. Ask for references. Then slowly let the student provide some care while you and your partner get some time together. Leaving your young child with ASD with someone else for a little bit is not neglecting your role as a parent. It provides something positive for your child. First, it gives your son or daughter a refreshed parent. Second, it provides benefits on its own. It is quite important that all children learn to accept care from other adults. It helps them learn that the world is a place to be trusted. It helps them get ready for preschool. It is a growing experience for children and for parents, and it is a superb learning experience for the students involved. Two of us, SJR and GD, got into this field through babysitting experiences we had as teenagers. Help others learn about ASD by sharing your child with them. What about your other children? Carmen was losing a lot of sleep worrying about whether she was neglecting her other child, Justino, and she missed the time they used to have together before Teresa was born, just the two of them. She had so much fun playing with Justino. He made parenting so rewarding. Now everything she had to give, all her energy and all her time, seemed to go to Teresa. She missed time with Justino, and he was talking about missing time with her. She didn't want him to suffer because of his sister's diagnosis. Brothers and sisters of children with ASD have special needs. Being sensitive to these needs will help all your children make a positive adjustment. Many studies have documented the concerns of brothers and sisters of children with ASD. Often they feel a sense of loss and loneliness when their parents' attention is consumed by their sibling with ASD. They may also experience feelings of resentment toward their sibling with ASD. And older children will feel guilty about feeling resentful. Schedule time to spend exclusively with each of your other children. It helps a sibling to spend time alone with parents. This special time can be as simple as going to the store, washing the car, having a bath, or reading a book together. Use the time to listen to this child, to hear about friends, school, interests, problems, feelings. Let the sibling know how special he is to you and how much you enjoy time with him. Also, let him know that you know the child with ASD takes a lot of your time and attention, and that sibling can tell you if he needs some time with you. Younger siblings may not be able to ask for time and attention, but they express it through their behavior or misbehavior. For example, crying, clinging, developing fears, or misbehaving to get attention. The important thing during these times is for a sibling to feel that this is his special time when your attention is focused on him. Teach skills that will help siblings interact in pleasurable ways with their sibling with ASD. Siblings may feel bad or rejected and unloved when their sibling with ASD won't play with them. Fortunately, research has shown that siblings can be taught skills that will help their relationship with the child with ASD. This can be helpful for all of the children. Help each sibling understand that ASD makes it very hard for children to learn to play, and that the sibling with ASD does not know how to play now, but that over time, the child will learn. Teach siblings how to give simple instructions that their sibling will follow, how to engage in simple games, and how to reward the child with ASD for appropriate play. Be sure to help the child with ASD follow through. These simple interactions help promote a bond and social relationship between siblings. Parallel play activities, where the siblings are all playing with similar materials, at the kitchen table with art materials or puzzles or snacks, should be encouraged. Be sure to include activities such as swinging outside on swings, playing chase, or watching a DVD together. These activities don't require the child with ASD to share or to engage in complex back-and-forth interactions. Talk about it. Studies have shown that siblings benefit from talking openly and frequently about a child's ASD. A sibling may not understand why the child with ASD does not play and talk with her. When you explain what ASD is and how it affects social and language development and other behavior, the sibling will be less likely to interpret the child's behavior as dislike. As the sibling gets older, her understanding and perspective will become more like yours, with more and more questions and worries. So it is important to have an open line of communication about ASD with your children. Use words and concepts that your children can understand. Provide simple explanations and phrases that a sibling can use to explain ASD to her friends, so she has ways to deal with other people over the ASD-related differences that take the sting out of teasing or questions. Model this by letting the sibling hear you explain ASD to others. Explaining ASD to a sibling will take different forms, depending on the age of the sibling. A preschool-age child won't be able to understand what ASD is, but will notice that a sibling is behaving differently. Elementary school-age children are likely to be very aware that their sibling is different and to be embarrassed about their sibling's behavior around friends. Talking openly about these differences with your children from the time they are little will enable them to voice their feelings instead of being ashamed of them. If a sibling doesn't want to have friends come over, ask about it. See if there are ways you can help this sibling be more comfortable. Siblings may also worry that ASD is contagious or that they too may develop ASD. Siblings may feel guilty about their negative feelings toward the child with autism. They can even feel guilty that they don't have autism. Some wonder if they somehow caused their sibling's ASD. Talk openly with your child about these fears and worries so you can provide facts and reassure your child. You will probably have these conversations many times, because it is unlikely that your child will understand everything that you say the first time you explain it. Different questions and concerns will arise over time. Make ASD an open subject in your household. If your child never asks about ASD, it's most likely because it seems to be an unacceptable topic. Bring it up yourself. The sooner the better, and the more frequently the better. Ask your child what scares him about his siblings' ASD, what worries him, what makes him angry, what he thinks about, and how it affects his life. Some siblings feel they must try to be perfect to make up for the child with ASD. They may feel pressure to achieve in academic or sports activities. The pressure may come from inside them, or it might be coming from you. Have your expectations increased for your other children because they do not have a disability? Not having autism does not make them super children. Help your child voice these feelings and listen quietly, as you do with your partner. Acknowledge and restate the feelings rather than rejecting them, interrupting them, or denying them. Some of them will be hard to hear, so be prepared. Your child may have some painful observations about you, about your absorption in the sibling with ASD, about the lack of family time, about your increased expectations for your child for greater maturity, responsibility, child care, household care, or emotional support. Listen. Take it in. Try not to deny, not to become defensive, and not to get angry. Listen to what your child is saying. Provide the information your child is asking for. Correct any misconceptions and reassure your child of your love, your acceptance of your child's feelings, and your appreciation for the child's honesty and trust in you. If your child's behavior has changed significantly, acting out, not seeming like herself for a long period, withdrawing from activities and relationships, if your efforts to talk to your child or provide more comfort are not helping, and if your child's functioning at school, at home, or with friends is suffering, talk to your child's doctor. Signs that a sibling may have difficulty include these: needing to be perfect, eating too little or too much, frequent complaints of headaches or stomach aches, loss of interest in everyday activities, frequent crying or worrying, withdrawing from social activities, increased aggression, new problems at school, signs of anxiety or depression. Take advantage of books and other sources specifically for siblings. Increasingly, the special needs of siblings of children with ASD and other developmental disabilities are being recognized. Numerous books written about and by siblings, including those with ASD, are available. We've listed some of these in the further reading section of the bonus PDF. Also, look for special programs, websites, and workshops for siblings of children with ASD. These programs offer siblings an opportunity to talk with other children who have a sibling with ASD, and especially to share their feelings and concerns with other children who understand the challenges and rewards of having a sibling with ASD. The Sibling Support Project, www.siblingsupport.org, is a national program dedicated to the brothers and sisters of people who have developmental disabilities and other special needs. The project's website offers information about workshops, conferences, publications, and opportunities for siblings to connect with one another. Autism Speaks, www.autismspeaks.org, also lists resources for siblings in the Family Services section. Studies have shown that being a sibling of a child with ASD can have benefits. Siblings often grow up to be people who have insight, empathy, and compassion, are mature, accepting, and self-sufficient, and are loyal toward their siblings with ASD and their families. Dealing with your extended family, help or hindrance. Extended family members can be among the greatest parts of a support system for a family with a newly diagnosed child with ASD, and they can also be one of the biggest challenges for young parents. If both your and your parents' families are there for you, supporting your concerns, aware of the evaluation process, sharing all the emotions that occur after diagnosis, providing comfort and reassurance, then rejoice. They are a strong part of your support system and will help immensely in the adjustment process. Provide them with all the information they want and you have. Let them help you. Let them care for your child. Let them join you in appointments, meetings, evaluations, as you and they wish. The more the extended family shares the challenge of autism, provides ongoing love, support, and encouragement for you, and appropriate optimism for your child, the better the adjustment process goes. However, extended family members go through all the same emotional processes that parents do. They may not want to see the problems your child has and may deny your observations. They may tell you that you're worrying too much, you expect too much, boys don't talk until later, an uncle didn't talk until age 3, or you're spoiling your child and doing too much for him. This makes it harder for you to move ahead, and young parents sometimes move away emotionally from their families during this period to get through it. If this is happening to you, there are several things you can do. First of all, trust yourself and your partner. You live with your child every day. You are not crazy. You love your child, and your worries are real. Proceed as we have suggested by calling your doctor. Don't feel guilty about distancing yourself a little from your family members if you need to get through this. Tell them as much as you can about each step in the process so they know what is going on, but make the decisions you know in your heart are right for you and your family and child. Second, turn to other people in your support system. Talk to friends and others who are sharing your concern and providing you with emotional support. Lean on them right now so you don't feel so alone. You need support to get through this period, and the more support a young couple has, the easier the process can be. Third, ask others who are part of the process to talk to members of your extended family. Your service coordinator, a parent from the autism advocacy group, one of your child's therapists or evaluators, or your child's doctor may be very willing to have a family meeting and answer members' questions. It is much easier to have another person providing the information than to do it alone when your family is not ready for the diagnosis. Take others up on their offers of help. Finally, continue as you need to for your partner and your children. Keep your extended family members aware of what is happening. You might provide them with copies of reports that people give to you, treatment plans, home programs. If they sometimes take care of your child, show them how to implement basic treatment routines that help your child. At some point, your family will come around to accepting the diagnosis and supporting you. However, family members all have their own timetables of acceptance and have to move at their own pace. Families come around, and seeing a child they love making progress is a big part of what brings them around. Occasionally, some family member will not adjust to your child's special needs and may even undermine what you are trying to do. If this happens, it's okay to limit the time your child spends with this person until he or she comes around. Taking care of yourself. Now it's time to talk about you. No time to take care of yourself now that you're devoted to helping your child with ASD? Ask yourself this. If you are tired, preoccupied, and stressed, how can you optimally care for your child and the rest of your family? Even though you may feel like you're